Welcome to Reality Check. I'm here with Makura Das. This is Mahatma Das. We're going to be talking today about connecting with your Dharma. And I like the word inspiration when I use the word Dharma, because Dharma is using our particular gifts and talents, that which inspires us, that which we are meant to be doing in the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness or serving Krishna.
The word Dharma means duty, it means truth, it means occupation, so many things. And for us, it's important to find something that we are excited about, something that we want to do for Krishna with love, so something where we can put our heart into. So when we join Krishna consciousness, we are taught the principle of doing the needful. Srila Prabhupada gave us this principle, and it's a very useful principle. But we see that devotees who have lasted in Krishna consciousness not only survived, but thrived, that they actually specialize in something. They find something they are excited about, they want to, and they become better and better at it. So it's important for us to find something we like to do and that we can do, we can become expert in, and that we can give a nice contribution. We are creative beings, and we want to express ourselves, and we can use these things in Krishna's service.
I want to read something that I love, and it's right in line with what you're saying. Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go out and do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. And when I read that quote, I thought, although it doesn't sound entirely correct to say it this way, I think ultimately it is correct if we understand it in the proper perspective. So I changed a few things. Don't ask yourself what ISKCON needs. And you think, well, how could I say that? I should be thinking what it needs. Yes, that's true, but often we find when we're doing just what's needed and it goes so much against our grain, we can lose our inspiration, lose our enthusiasm. So if we look at it that way, don't ask yourself what ISKCON needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go and do that. Because what ISKCON needs is people who have come alive. It doesn't need thousands of devotees who are uninspired and dead, who have no life. Just like Bhakti Siddhanta said, if you have life, you can preach. So the basis of our life as devotees is to be alive spiritually. And the basis of spreading Krishna consciousness is that you have a group of people who are alive, who are enthusiastic.
Srila Prabhupada said, wrote to one disciple, actually uninitiated devotee, that he should ask his temple president to find him activity that he is inspired to do. And he says it's advantageous, Srila Prabhupada says it's advantageous to do something we like to do, which we are inspired to do. And it even positively affects following the principles. So this principle of doing something that you like to do, that you're inclined to do, is very, very, I think, important but neglected. It's neglected because we run the movement, we need to do so many things, and we try to fit people into different projects, but we forget about them. And when I do coaching, my focus is on the benefit of the individual. So I ask devotees, what is your dream? What you are really excited about, what, ideally speaking, what would you like to do for Krishna? And then, in the beginning, they don't exactly know, but as we go on with sessions, then something emerges and they really become excited. I keep on asking these questions, what you really would like to do for Krishna? And then they come up with something.
Well, here's something interesting in relation to what you said. See your desires as gifts to heed, rather than longings to suppress. In other words, in Krishna consciousness, the idea of desire, material desire, it's a no-no, it's bad. You don't give into it. So when we're looking at our desire in terms of our inspiration, sometimes we confuse it. Whereas we can see desire may be, not always of course, but it may be indication of what gifts we have and how Krishna is going to, or how Krishna allows us to serve. And I always think, what if everyone in ISKCON were exactly like me? I ask devotees this question. What if everyone were exactly like you? How would it be better and how would it be worse? And you can see both things. It'll be better because of your good qualities. It'll be worse because of your bad qualities, but it would be worse also because everybody would be the same. And therefore Krishna gives us different natures and talents and attitudes and ways of seeing things to make up the whole that a society is needed to make a society.
When working with devotees, I find that they are afraid to desire. So I just encourage them to desire, even if a desire is not 100% pure. Let's say a devotee says, I want to become a famous book distributor. So this is not pure desire. He wants to do service, but also he wants some fame. And I just encourage them, well, go for it, because if you become too proud, Krishna will sort you out. Don't worry. He'll show you that what is false and what is real. But it's better to do something than nothing. And
he might show you the back door, kick you out if you're not careful.
Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, Prabhupada, he so often encouraged people whose motives might not be 100% pure, but they had energy, and he saw that energy, and he used that energy.
Yeah.
You know, do you ever hear that quote? Prabhupada said, actually, the goal is just to chant. You know, if we could chant 24 hours, and if we could sit down and chant, that would be the goal. And then Prabhupada said, but you can't do that. And he said, therefore, I've created so many big projects. You've heard that quote? I've created so many big projects just to engage you. And it's interesting because we think we have to save the conditioned souls. And Prabhupada's saying, well, in a sense, I'm giving you the service of saving the conditioned souls to save yourself because you have the energy and the inclination to do so many things. And in relation to what you were saying, I think a healthy attitude is if I have an inclination to do something, I know for many devotees there's a fear because I like doing it, I might get attached to it.
Yeah.
There's the fear. And that's a valid fear. I might use that as an excuse for service, but it will become sense gratification. So the attitude is, okay, Krishna has given me abilities and talents. How can I use them favorably? And what is favorable? Favorable, according to our definition of surrender, is what is advantageous to spiritual advancement and advantageous to helping other people. So I have to at least be somewhat cautious when I connect with my Dharma now to be able to employ it in a way that I don't hang myself.
Yeah, well, there is our inclination, which is according to our conditioned nature, and then we, under good guidance, we should engage this in Krishna's service. And there is our eternal occupation and eternal relationship with Krishna, which is at the moment far away from us. We don't know what is our swarup, what is our eternal service, our eternal form, our eternal position in the spiritual world. But these inclinations that are already there can be engaged in much more effective way. And by discussing with our spiritual guides, we can find out what is it how can I serve Krishna according to what he has given me, or also according to what is my conditioning. And this requires some guidance and some deeper discussion. And then devotee has to explore a little bit and then find what this is. Maybe try a few things also to see how it goes, and then focus on one thing.
I want to tell a story of my own search. And I think a lot of us don't have to search to know what it is that moves us. Although, interestingly, if you ask many people, they'll say, I don't know. I don't know what I should do. I don't know what inspires me. And I... I had an interesting experience to discover what I think I already understood, but maybe I was in denial or I was just blinded to it. My sister at this time was living maybe about 2 miles from the Los Angeles Temple. So I was living in the Los Angeles Temple. She wanted me to spend some time with her. So I said, and spending time with her meant doing a lot of things that she wanted to do. And so I said, well, if we do that, just give me till about 1 o'clock every day on my own to do my thing. And at this point, I had never been living in a situation where I had the whole morning to do whatever I wanted. I just created my own schedule. But the way I created my own schedule was kind of, I just let it flow. It was like natural. I didn't pre-plan it. So I remember I would wake up early every morning, and what I would do was read. I'd read for 2, 3, 4, or 5 hours before I do anything. And after I read, I would chant my rounds. I would just leave her house and walk for an hour in one direction, turn around, walk an hour in the other direction. That way I was guaranteed before I returned, because I didn't want to chant there. I couldn't focus. I would finish my rounds. And she had a piano in her house, and in the room I was staying was where the piano was. And so then I would come back, and that brought me, it was about 11 o'clock at that time, 11:30. Maybe I ate breakfast, I can't remember. Sometimes I don't eat breakfast. Anyway, I came back, and I was on the piano for an hour or two, and I every day wrote a song or part of a song. So then I looked at this pattern and said, what am I doing? I'm studying for hours a day, also writing. I'm writing songs and I'm chanting my rounds. That brought me up to 1:30. I could have continued doing that. And I said, this is interesting. I'm looking at the Mahatma Das machine. I'm looking at the body like a machine. Every machine has a function. So what is this machine doing? Just like Krishna says in the Gita, the body is a machine. So we have the Akura machine. What does the Akura machine do? The Akura machine likes to inspire devotees to be successful. He's dedicated to success, possibilities, potentiality. That's what the Akura machine does. And the Akura machine travels around the world coaching and pushing people.
Okay.
So it was just a revelation to me and say, well, if I just let my machine loose, there's no restriction there, what would the machine do? I said, okay, I see what it does. It likes to write, it likes to study, it likes to teach, it likes music, it likes to write songs. I said, okay. You know, it was like, I knew this already, but it was just so obvious at that point. And then in previous years, these tendencies were there, but I had other services which were more important or seemed more important. And I was always suppressing these tendencies to go more deeply into study, more deeply into teaching, more deeply into music. And in the name of duty or doing the needful, I suppressed them. But I don't want to say there's anything wrong with doing the needful. Many things were necessary, and I'm happy I did it. But at the same time, it was going on under me, this hankering, like, I really want to do, this is what, if I could do any, I always used to think I'd be doing things, management and so many things, and I'd be thinking, if I could just do anything, I would envision myself in India at a college in Mayapur, which did not exist, just teaching devotees. I would just envision, this is what I want to do. And I would see all the classes I would be teaching. But then I would just put that vision away. It seemed unrealistic, or I wasn't connecting. No, Mahatma, put it together. This is really, really where your inspiration lies. This is really what you want to do.
Yeah, well, it's not always easy to find what is your calling, what is your dharma, or what is your voice. But with the help of another devotee who is interested in you, you can work to discover. So by going through different questions and thinking about it more deeply, looking into your heart more deeply, then one can find out. And sometimes we need to try different things until we find something we are really excited about. And Krishna, my understanding is that he wants to see that you do something for him with love. not just duty, and you know, I have to sacrifice and things like that, but something. So I encourage devotees to always have something aside, apart from like their duty and something they have accepted as a responsibility, that do something that you like to do. Like one devotee here, all he wanted to play mridanga. I said, okay, spend at least half an hour playing mridanga. This will inspire you, and this will spill over into other areas where you can, you know, be more enthusiastic to do other things. And I also encourage devotees to sing, whether they are very musical or not. Because, you know, singing is such an amazing transformational activity. To express themselves. Like the other day I wrote on my Facebook that if you don't express yourself, you will die emotionally and spiritually. And because soul has to express itself, and we can express our devotion, we can express our affection for devotees, we can express so many things. So when you start expressing yourself, you can also, this is also, it will help you find your dharma, find your calling. And then it becomes also natural. Like those who like to sing and to write songs, they feel very satisfied when they do something like that. And now, so many other devotees become inspired by this natural expression.
We have a problem that we have to deal with, which is feeling guilty for doing what I want to do. It seems, we're talking about here connecting with your dharma, it seems adharmic to do that. No, we are given the instruction by the spiritual master. We should be free from all personal motives, anyabhilashita shunyam, and we should just dedicate ourselves without any personal interest. So this is the way we understand pure devotional service. Yet, on the other side, we have, I like to look at our gifts like, let's say, we can look at them like money. Okay, you've inherited money. You have all this money. And you just put the money in the bank, and you think, money is Maya. So you don't want to deal with it. Where's your money? Oh, it's in the bank. What's it doing? You're getting interest on it? No, it's just in the bank. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to think about it. It's just Maya. I just want to do what my guru is asking me. So then you're out on the street, and what are you doing? You're collecting money because that's what your guru asked you to do. But you have all this money that's being neglected. So if we look at the money as a gift, Krishna has given you certain gifts. What are you doing with those gifts? Oh, they're in the bank. I don't want to use them. Those are Maya. I just want to do what my guru wants. We're not saying you don't do what your guru wants. You don't do what Prabhupada wants. But within his mission, there are so many things that he wants that are necessary, which could even be considered doing the needful, for which you can employ your talents. And as I said many times, which is so important, and I'm going to say it again, in case you didn't get it or you haven't heard the other conversations we're having. Srila Prabhupada said, when you lose enthusiasm, everything is finished. Another thing, which is very important, is for us to realize that Prabhupada came to America to spread Krishna consciousness. His goal was that he wanted people to be happily engaged in Krishna service. He wanted people to find a place where they'd be happy in devotional service. So a lot of times devotees have a lot of guilt surrounding what inspires them or what would so-called make them happy because they think they should be doing something higher or different. But when you come alive, then you end up doing much greater service to yourself and everyone. And therefore, if we remember, enthusiasm is fundamental, and Prabhupada came here to make us happy, and we know, Raso Varjam Rasopya said, if we're not happy, we're not going to stay in Krishna consciousness, we're not going to stay well. That can help us balance this whole concept of, well, the guilt of not doing the duty or doing what we might consider to be the highest service.
There has to be a balance between sadhana and also doing what is our cherished project, something that we like to do. Sometimes devotees also neglect sadhana because they have something they like to do and they just do this all day long. They neglect family, they neglect other important aspects of their lives. But I wanted to mention something about being inspired.
Please inspire us.
The Bodhisattva say, I'm not inspired. I'm not inspired by classes. I'm not inspired by Mangala Arati. I'm not inspired by kirtans. So what I say to the devotees is that it's your duty to be inspired every single day. It is your duty to ensure, it's your responsibility to ensure that you are enthusiastic every single day. How are you going to do it? It's your problem. So we can actually find ways to get inspired every day, but we have to become diligent. The mind has to become active, and we have to want this, you know, to want this state that I want to be inspired every single day. And it's not some kind of artificial hype up thing. It's just connecting yourself, like when you chant in the morning your rounds. This can be a wonderful process to become super inspired for the whole day. And if we listen to our rounds, you can be inspired. Your whole day is amazing.
But if you're not connected with an inspiring service, you're praying to the holy name, and now you're inspired, but then you have to go into a service which is so much against who you are and your nature, that it's possible that service could actually be like a vacuum cleaner to your enthusiasm and just suck it out. So when you're talking about inspiration, and you know, the what we can say, what's the inner music? What's going on inside? And you're talking about inspiring yourself. My experience is when you're connected to your Dharma, you don't have to worry about inspiring yourself. That's the least of your problems. You have to worry about calming yourself down and not becoming a workaholic, because now you're so inspired.
Yes.
You have to worry about spending, you know, that time. You have to worry about the balance part of it, because now you're totally inspired. So if you don't have something that totally inspires you, that if you don't wake up every morning thinking, today I get to do this, then that's a problem. That's going to be a problem for you, because it's going to be that much harder to maintain enthusiasm just by your good rounds. Okay, you chant good rounds. I'm inspired to do what? Oh, now I have to do this or that uninspiring thing. And then what happens is, what I've seen in devotees' life, okay, they get inspired in a sadhana, and then they go to work, and the work has no relation to Krishna consciousness. So they come home from work, and they're drained. So it's like the vacuum, right? All the inspiration they got has been vacuumed out during work, and they come home, and they don't have energy to do anything. Well, whereas you find devotees who are inspired in a particular service, when they come home from work, now I have 2 hours to do this service. They're just waiting for that. So work is just, let's get it done and move on so I can get home. Let's finish it early so I can move on to my service.
Well, how can you be inspired? That's a question that might be relevant for our listeners, devotees, that how can I be inspired when, you know, I have a wonderful morning chanting and dancing with devotees or at my home, then I have to go to this, you know, stupid work. I think that someone who works, he can be inspired like anything if he sees differently his work and if he sees preaching opportunities in his work. So if you see that you can do something at your work that will bring people closer to Krishna consciousness, then you are excited to go there and find these opportunities and just, you know, do something that is very, very valuable and significant.
According to your particular nature. So,
right.
So when we say sharing Krishna consciousness, or we often say preaching doesn't necessarily mean sitting down and having a philosophical discussion or debate. It may mean distributing prasadam at work.
Yeah.
It may be hanging a verse from Bhagavad Gita on your desk for people to see.
Or just building relationships so that people know this guy is very, he's interested in me, he's very kind, he's knowledgeable, he's experienced, he knows so much about so many things, he's a resource for me, And one day they will ask you, so where do you get all these things? And then you can tell them, well, I'm getting it from the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and meditation, mantra meditation.
I want to read something which I think will inspire devotees to be more introspective about what they should be doing in Krishna's service. When God gives an assignment, He also gives the skill. Study your skills then to reveal your assignment.
Wow.
In other words, okay, I'm looking at my skill. What does Krishna want me to do? He's giving me these particular skills and abilities. I know many devotees who are connected with their skills. They know directly what they are, but they're not using them. And that's the... It's so painful. I have this skill, but I can't figure out how to employ it. So, number one, we connect with our skills. Number two, if I have these skills, what is my assignment now? How do I use these skills? And number three, begin somehow, anyway, somehow or other. Even like we find that Prabhupada says, when you write for your own purification. It's not to be published. So let's say you're connected with writing. So you just write. Or you want to write a script for a movie. Or you want to produce something. Perhaps it'll never happen, but you begin the process because that's where your inspiration lies.
As if.
I had the experience. I don't know if I mentioned this before. I had the experience. I was a temple president. And whenever I manage at a certain point, it hits me, how should I say it? It goes so much against my grain that it kind of creates a bad taste in my mouth. That's how management affects me. And I've seen in my own life, I've never lasted more than 2 years in a management position because my inclination is so much to be a teacher and a musician that I have to suppress that. Often have to suppress that to do management. So I was in a management situation and I had come up against that barrier. And so what I had done during that time, I was hoping or wanting to develop a festival program. And what gave me life was planning the program out. And I had no idea when we'd be able to do that or even if we would do that. But working on it gave me intense inspiration. Just the theoretical platform of working. So let's say you're inspired to do something and you, at the present time, there's no way I can work on it now. I don't have the money, the resources. I don't have enough people working with me. At least then you can begin planning it. How will you do it? When will you do it? How will you raise the funds? Perhaps it's a 10-year project. You say, well, you know, I'm going to retire from work, or I'm going to take a vacation, and on that vacation I'm going to work on this, and if I take 2 weeks every year in 10 years, I can finish it. Something, just to connect with it.
Start dreaming about your goal, about your project, about something wonderful you want to do for Krishna. And dream boldly, don't be afraid, and don't think, oh, there is no resources. Because there is unlimited resources. Don't limit yourself by thinking like that. But if you can ask yourself this question, if time and money are not an obstacle, what would I do? If I have a limited time and unlimited money, then you may come up with some ideas. But it's very, very important. So I would like to ask Mahatma Prabhu, what is his dream? What is his passion? What excites you? What is this exciting thing that you want to do for Krishna?
Before I answer that, I want to say one other thing, which will be a preface to this answer. What excited me when I was young was rock and roll, which excites many young people who are crazed with the desire to be famous and also love playing music. And I don't know how strong the desire was. It was not extremely intense, but I had a desire that it would be nice to be a rock and roll star. So many years ago, I saw an interview with some rock bands, and they told their history of how they went from nobody to somebody. And in every case, what they would say was, they would see some band on stage, and they'd be thinking, I want to be there. I want to be on stage.
Yeah.
With an intensity and also a determination and a confidence. I could do that also. I could be up there. I want to be up there. Just an intense drive. Every single band said that. And I said, yes. That's what's required. So something similar happened to me. A devotee called me and said, there's this really good seminar. You can go for free through my company. I think you should go. You'd really like it. And the weekend of that seminar, I was free. So because I trusted her. On her recommendation, I went. There were about 1,000 people there. I'd never been to a seminar before outside of ISKCON. There were 1,000 people there. Huge stage, huge screen. You know, you're in the back. You could hardly see the speaker. So they had this huge screen, big sound system. Everything's being filmed. Music, lights changing, going up and down, different exercises, the people on the stage totally inspired, funny as anything, dramatic, they knew their subject well, great presenters. About 3 hours into it, I was sitting in the audience and I said, there were actually about 25 devotees there.
Ooh.
And in my mind I was thinking, why are we in the audience? We're supposed to be on stage. We're supposed to be sitting in the audience. We're supposed to be doing that. I got so inspired, and I was sitting there, and I was thinking, I don't know what it's going to take to do this, but my vision was at that point, I was standing on the stage, and there were 1,000 people, and one of the things that you do in the seminar is you share with one another. So I was envisioning people sharing their realizations in the seminar. I understand I'm not the body because I'm different from my mind and my body's changed and it's new chemistry now. I'm not the same as I was. And I envision, you know, if I envision myself as 5, I can see that body's different and so forth. So I just had this vision and I was thinking, if I can do that, and thousands of people are doing that, and I'm walking around the room listening to thousands of people express their understanding and realization to their partners, I want to call Prabhupada to look at it and say, then I can die peacefully and say, Prabhupada, I did it. You know, I established a company, and it's going to go on, and there are other devotees doing it, and now we're doing it all over the world, and we've developed these seminars, and it's transforming people. And all these people are learning about Krishna who would never dare or dream of coming to a temple. So that inspired me tremendously. And then, from that inspiration, something amazing happened. And I have to tell this because I think it exemplifies everything that we're talking about. Prior to that, I was, a few years prior to that, 5 years prior to that, I was in Vrindavan. I had spent about 2 years in Vrindavan. And while in Vrindavan, I was working with the VIHE, both as a teacher and in a management capacity to a limited degree. I helped them with the advertising, with the strategy. I helped them develop, it's more like a consultant, in a consultant capacity, but I helped them develop the tape ministry, and I helped in any capacity that I had talents for. And then I taught. That was my main service was to teach. So I did that for 2 years, and my daily schedule was that I would study and write about 4 hours a day before I would even begin preparing for my class. And then I would prepare for my class another hour or two, and then I would go teach the class for an hour and a half every day. What to speak of living in Vrindavan. So it was, for a brahminically inclined person who likes to teach and study and write, it was ideal. So what happened was, at that point, I had no home in America, and we had no children. We had no stability. We had nothing in America. When we would come back during the summer to America, we would just rent an apartment, find something, and then we would earn a little money. So at a certain point, my wife said, you know, if we don't have a place to come back in America, and every time we come back, we're looking for a place and borrowing cars, and it's too unstable. I can't do this. I want to raise a family. So then we decided, well, let's go back to America, and then we'll get established financially, and that would be a better position to be able to go back to India, to have something here. So we have the home, we have some income. We didn't have any income. So we decided to start a business. And I never worked in business, and it was a rude awakening to the world of business. And the greatest awakening is something I should have realized, is that I'm not a business person. So having to do that was drudgery. It was pain. It was suffering. I hated it. Just waking up and looking to do that was horrible. And what happens when you're in that situation, you look for diversions to forget your suffering. So what are the diversions you look to? Generally, they're not Krishna conscious, because the very activity is draining you of your life and soul. So then you just zone out watching television, or you zone out reading some books or some movies, or pick up your guitar and play it for 4 hours. You know, you want to escape. And when it gets really bad, you escape into some kind of addiction.
Yeah.
Sexual addiction, drug addiction, eating addiction, whatever it may be. So, back to the seminar. I was sitting in the seminar. I want to do that. We got to do this. We have to start a company. This is it. We have to employ devotees in brahminical activity. This was my vision. Employing devotees. We have this whole, like an alter ego of ISKCON, where we have centers teaching seminars. Devotees employed as Brahmas teaching seminars. So, in the middle of that seminar, he says, I teach a course called Train the Trainer, and we teach you how we do seminars. And I was so impressed by what they were doing. I said, if I could get trained by these people, this would be phenomenal. So I was getting a check back, a tax refund, and it was the exact amount of what they were charging. So I immediately signed up for the course. So when I signed up for the course, at that point, it was a major change or shift in my consciousness, because now it was a statement that this is my calling, I've acknowledged it, and I'm doing something about it. And what I noticed at that point, all the maya on the periphery of my life that would allure me when I was burned out from doing all the stuff that wasn't me, that wasn't inspiring, it vanished.
Wow.
And it vanished because of the commitment, and it also vanished because now I was connected. So in that time, I would have just kind of zoned out, just being drained of the day's work. That was my time to begin working on developing seminars. So I was reading and studying and writing, and I started writing and writing, and I couldn't stop writing, and I was just getting addicted to writing and studying and developing courses. And I saw what a difference that made in terms of the influence of Maya in my life. And then I look around to devotees who would tell me they're struggling with Maya, and I would find they didn't have that inspiration in their life. It was just the work. It was just the drudgery.
Mm. Well, that's wonderful. This is a wonderful example that probably many devotees are going through the same challenge. And from your example, we can see that one of the best cures for being distracted from Krishna consciousness and getting into all these kinds of things that we try to escape to, which are usually detrimental to our spiritual life, is to find something you are excited to do and, you know, work on it. And even if you start doing it like even few minutes a day, but you look forward to it, you will sit and you will meditate on your dream, on something wonderful you want to do for Krishna. So that's something that is very practical and that anyone can do.
When you say dream, when I looked at my dream, I had a vision of me standing on the stage. And when I do japa retreats, often I have a vision of sitting on a stage chanting japa with 1,000 people who have never chanted before. I actually have that vision. And I can see how important the vision is, because the vision drives you to make that vision a reality. So when you say you connect with a mission, it's good to have the vision of what could be the outcome of doing this. Or right now there's a devotee here, he's making a movie, a feature movie. So it might be nice for him to have a vision of getting an Academy Award or just seeing that become a hit, or just that kind of vision of this is what I'm working for, and I could offer that. What if this became a hit? And offering that at Prabhupada's feet on his Vyasasana, the award, or like Tamal Krishna Maharaj, when he brought Srila Prabhupada And Prabhupada said, what kind of preaching are you doing? And he said, I'll show you. And he brought 10, 20 shaved up brahmacharis. He said, this is my preaching. That's the offering, like the offering of flowers. I want to make this as my this service as my offering to my spiritual master. And having that vision of someday I'll be on television, someday I'll have the syndicated radio show, someday I'll have the orphanage, someday I'll have the number one selling book, or the CD that hits the top of the chart, whatever it is, and then I can offer that to Srila Prabhupada.
One devotee said that he would like to have be like a retreat guide, or not retreat guide, but you know these things when you go in nature,
right?
And then you have like an adventure in nature. You go through all kinds of things. You go in these mountain rivers, and or go down the river, or climb and things like that. And he would like to preach in nature like this and use all these experiences to show people how we are connected with God, how our skills come, and so many things. So he said, this is what I would like to do. At the moment, he is doing some work, but this is his dream.
Right.
And gradually we will work on achieving this. So this is exactly where coaching can help. Where, to help you to achieve what you want to achieve for Krishna, Gita coaching that I do. And Srila Prabhupada said in many places, everything is possible by Krishna's mercy. So if we accept that principle and work together, then, you know, you never know what you can achieve.
Arkura, he's a very powerful coach because he gets right to the point. And he helps you see your blind spots. He helps you see where you have to go to take the next step. And he doesn't really force you to do anything beyond what you want to do or what you can do. He just encourages you and shows you how important it is to take the first step, how little it may be. That's not what's important, how much you accomplish now. And philosophically speaking, the result we get is not what's important. It's the effort. It's the utilization. At least I'm utilizing my talents that Krishna has given me. I'm not suppressing them out of some fear that I won't be successful, or out of some false guilt that I shouldn't be doing this, or philosophical misunderstanding, or any kind of apprehension. But I'm just moving forward with the talents Krishna has given me in his service, and then I'll leave the results to Krishna. Maybe Krishna will not use me yet because I'm not pure. Maybe it will take 10 years. Maybe he'll only use me when I'm 65 years old and I'm more renounced than I am now. But by that time, because I've worked on this, I've become so qualified. Now Krishna sees, yes, you are both pure and qualified, and within a matter of years, you can do phenomenal service, as Prabhupada did. You may spend 10, 20 years preparing, and then in a few years, there can be an explosion.
In one sense, more important than what you achieve in life is who do you become by your efforts. And you can become an extremely inspired devotee. You can become somebody who is so fired up that his association is contagious. He just fires up so many people. And I think every devotee should become an extremely inspiring person. When people meet him, they just think, wow, who was this guy, you know? And then they also start to think, well, what is my dream? I'm going to die soon, so what am I going to do? You know, I want to be like him and things like that.
Well, also what you're saying, it's important what you become, and you have to become somebody different to do something different. So by taking that step, when you connect with your inspiration, you naturally grow, because you're growing, as we said, you're going to be growing out of your comfort zone. You're going to be stretching beyond what you're doing now. One of the things that they taught us in Train the Trainer, in giving seminars, they said, whatever subject you choose to teach, understand you will become that. So you may want to choose, you want to be careful what you choose to teach, or you at least want to consider. And I thought, that's so nice.
Yeah.
Because we can pick what I would like to become, this kind of person. Therefore, I want to teach that subject. And one of my friends, he does seminars. And I ask him, how did it go? And he said, well, as always, I think I grew the most. I think I benefited the most. Yeah. By helping people grow, I've grown most. So we're going to end here. I hope you can take some of these points connecting with your Dharma, your inspiration, the importance of enthusiasm, the importance of using your gifts in Krishna's service, the importance of being who you are and not being feeling guilty about being who you are, and utilizing that somehow in Krishna's service and leaving the results for Krishna, just making the effort. And Akura is so kind to offer himself to help you do this as a coach, and he works as a Brahmin. You can pay him or not pay him, that's not the issue. He works as a Brahmin. He does his service as a service, and you can connect with him anywhere around the world on Skype or by telephone. And
email.
Or email. It's just a fantastic service. I highly recommend it because Akura has helped me so much in just getting more tuned in to what I wanted to do. And having that second person that you have to come back to next week and say what did, and tell him what you did based on what you decided together you would do is very, very powerful. Where on your own, you may or may not commit. Some people are more committed to themselves than others, but having another person is important. So Akura's email address is akura@pamho.net, akura@pamho.net. And if you would like to contact me, mahat@aol.com or mahatmadasa@gmail.com. Akura, what's your website?
VedicIlluminations.com/Gita Coaching.
VedicIlluminations.com/Gita Coaching. VedicIlluminations.com/Gita Coaching. And my website, www.tstrain.com. That stands for Touchstone Training, tstrain.com. And within, it is now, we are now in June of 2009 recording this. Within a month or two, I should have another website, new and improved, Mahatma Das, www.mahatmadas.com, Das and Dasa. So we look forward to seeing you again. Thank you for listening. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.